and welcome to another episode of Promoted. I'm Felicity Fury, your host, CEO and co-founder of We Aspire. And today I'm very excited to have the amazing Amy Lazala, Chief Engineer at Rail at the Department of Transport and Planning Victoria, joining us. Amy, you are a superstar when it comes to rail, engineering, all the things. Thank you firstly so much for joining us. It's such a pleasure to have you here today.
Thanks for having me. I'm very excited.
Well, we're going to dive into all things about your career, how you got there. I'd love to start with your journey. How did you go from engineer to chief engineer? Very boss title, by the way. I love that. What's the journey been like?
Yeah, it's been fun. People now occasionally call me chief, and it's still funny and strange, but I'm getting used to it. It's been a bizarre journey. If anybody had asked me when I graduated in 2007, where I'd be in 2024, this is not where I planned. First of all, in Australia, in Melbourne, and as the role chief engineer of Rail, it's been quite a journey. Yeah, one that I'm very grateful for. But yeah, like I said, I graduated with a bachelor's in engineering and business in 2007 in the UK, and went onto a graduate scheme with Bombardier, as it was at the time, and did 2 years working in the depot. So literally crawling under trains and getting my hands dirty and organizing drawing filing cabinets. That was a big part of the job as a graduate. Really getting involved in the front line and understanding how maintenance worked and understanding how depots worked. That was fascinating. After the graduate scheme, which was 2 years, I then wanted to get more into the design piece. Luckily, Bombardier did both building of trains and maintaining of trains. So I went to the design team. My bachelor's had focused more on materials and manufacturing. So I went into the materials engineering team, of which turned out fire engineering happened to be a big driver of, because the fire requirements for trains is quite intense, and for good reason, as I'm not sure if you've seen, there's been a number of e-scooter fires on trains recently. There's a good example in Toronto where the train actually held up from the fire. And
wow.
That is a really good example of how the materials that were selected had good fire properties and protected the asset. So that's kind of what I used to do. So I got very nerdy when that happened at New Year's, and no one was harmed, by the way, so it's all good. It's just a lesson to be learned. So I started getting a lot into material selection, material properties, and fire properties in particular. In order to get chartered as an engineer, I then wanted to do a master's, and I was looking at different masters to do. And Bombardier said, we need a qualified fire engineer. If you do a master's in fire engineering, we'll support you through that. So I did. I took the offer, and I'm very glad I did, because fire engineering is a fascinating topic of thermos and fluids. So I studied part-time, worked full-time. In that time, my boss of the team, he was later in his career, and he didn't really want to have to be doing lots of traveling. And he saw that I was a young whippersnapper that was very excited to see the world, and sent me off to Europe to be part of the authoring of the European standard for fire engineering in tunnels, and
wow.
Those of trains and in tunnels. So I then had that experience and got very knowledgeable on the standards that were coming out. At the same time, the Australian team were building trains to the British standard and also to the European standard. And so I was helping them with their projects. And they said, do you want to work on Australian projects from Australia rather than the UK? So I did move to Australia. Differently to the UK, the fire engineering space was in the safety team, which was part of RAMS, like reliability, availability, maintainability, and safety. So less in materials and more on that safety angle, which was a weird pivot, but it worked out quite well. So I was doing safety, I was doing my fire safety work. And then in the quiet times of fire reports, I'd do some reliability analysis and started to get really interested in reliability. And obviously with my maintenance background from my graduate scheme, I kind of tied all that knowledge together and was really enjoying the RAMS piece. And I was working on a bid for new trains for Queensland. It was a kind of a direct purchase, so very quiet reliability model. People paid attention to it, but it wasn't a critical piece of the bid until the government changed, and they changed the procurement model to what's called a PPP, public-private partnership, where a bank invests and then the government pays back the bank based on performance. Suddenly my reliability model became the financial model for how the bank got their money back. And people were very interested in my little reliability model. Luckily, I had my bachelor's in engineering and business, so I understood the financial part and I could speak bank. So I very quickly got thrown into a bid team for a $4 billion bid and was having some very financially strategic discussions. And I loved it. My brain was firing on all cylinders for that bid, and it was a really exciting time. We won. So the new trains in Queensland, the QNGRs, that was a project I was working on. And then I delivered that up to the first train, and I was doing the performance model of that. So as the design evolved, I would then edit the reliability model and look what that did, and see also through that, look for areas where there's going to be high penalties, and then see if we could design that out. So it's a really, you know, nerdy space of where engineering meets finance, which would be really fun. And then in my quarter life crisis, I ran off to Paris to go study sustainable and cross-cultural business management. While I was there, I was working part-time with Bombardier, still talking to other projects about what I'd done in Queensland and trying to see if I could advise them on how they could do something similar on their projects. Unfortunately, the university course that I was on disbanded after one term. It's a whole long other story. But then I was in France kind of going, well, I've not got the course that I wanted to do. What am I going to do next? And that was around the time that the new trains for Melbourne, the HCMTs, were going out to bid, and Bombardier called me going, well, who does what you do? Can you help us? And I said, well, actually, I'm kind of at a loose end. So how about I come back and I do that for you guys? And so I did. Unfortunately, we weren't successful. So then I was looking at what's next. And someone from my network flagged to me that SNC-Lavalin, as it was at the time, was looking to set up a new team, which is Through Life Engineering, looking at this engineering finance connection and how you can look at common failures in a system and design them out. So I went and led that team for 18 months. There's a lot of traveling involved, so it kind of wore me down in a personal aspect. And then someone else in my network said, well, you need a local job. So MTM have a one-year contract for a head of engineering rolling stock. How about you do that? So I put my hat in the ring, luckily got selected, and then ended up at MTM for 4.5 years. I was head of engineering for rolling stock for ended up being 2.5 years. And then my boss, the chief engineer there, said, I've got a bit of a hole in infrastructure in the level crossing space. You don't have any infrastructure on your CV. How about you go and do this and take your engineering governance knowledge over there and do that? So I said, okay. And I did that for 2 years before taking on this role. And then as I was going on maternity leave, I interviewed for this role and they were very kind to offer it to me and wait for me to finish my maternity leave. And then,
joined the
Department of Transport, as it was now then. And now it's Department of Transport and Planning. So as I said, very strange path. Lots of support from people in my network and people flagging things to me going, have you seen this? This looks like something you'd be good at and you'd enjoy. Or people going, you look like your personal state's taking a bit of a toll with all the travel. You might need to take a break. Have you seen this? And yeah, so very much grateful to my network to help me navigate through that career path.
That's amazing. I've seen you speak on a whole range of topics, and one of them is that the climate side of things or the sustainable development goals. So what's, I think, fascinating about your journey is you've had some really deep technical knowledge around the fire piece, around rail. I feel like you're my go-to rail person on anything rail, but it's so much broader than that. And you've had the business piece, the finance, a lot of technical thinking, but then also strategic. And that's something I find really interesting about people who've gone from technical roles into that first leadership role. It can be tricky kind of balancing those things. Like the business aspect really helped you in that. What kind of things do you wish you knew before you got into that chief engineer role?
Good question. The thing I wish I'd known, or probably I should have realized sooner, is that people in senior roles don't have all the answers and they don't know everything. Yes, they've been around for a long time and they've got a lot of experience, but you can't possibly know everything. I was at one point, I was like striving to get knowledge across as much as possible, which, you know, it's done me well. And I still love to know as much as I can about as many different topics, because that's just how my brain works. But I don't worry about it as much these days, about having to know everything. So I think I'm giving myself a little bit more slack there, because I've realized, one, you can't possibly, and two, no one does. So, you know, leaders, particularly people in senior positions, they're just doing the best they can with the knowledge they have available to them at the time. And sometimes they make the right decisions, sometimes they don't, but, you know, they do their best based on the experience they have. So absolutely, experience does help and getting a breadth of knowledge does help, but you can't possibly know everything. So don't try to know everything. Just try to understand as much as you can about the problem in front of you and ask as many questions as you can to get the knowledge that you need about the problem in front of you. Then hopefully you'll navigate through it appropriately.
The engineer in me hates that, because I would go, I want to know everything. I think that's the whole reason I studied engineering, is go, how does it work and why? And I want to know so much detail before making a decision. I think that's one of the challenges around leadership, is making the decision with the answers that you have in front of you. And recently a situation came up on one of the boards that my husband's on, where there was two possible solutions, and he said both of them aren't great. They're like kind of average, and it's tricky when then you have to go, well, you're kind of making the best of a bad situation. And that's, I think, also frustrating or challenging when you are in a leadership position where you're kind of making the most of what you got. Have you experienced that yourself as well?
Oh, massively. I mean, the rail, and particularly in this role, you know, we're operating the gray. There is no perfect solution. There is no black and white. You know, we've got the railway, even though there's a lot of private entities within the rail industry, it's always going to be pseudo-public because it is a public transport network. The majority of it, obviously you've got some private freight networks, but the majority is public transport networks. So you're always dealing with political pressure. You've got funding pressures as well, because you're using public funds at the end of the day. Unless someone would like to donate a lot of money to the railway, by the way, that's the only option. But yeah, it's public funds. You've got the political sway, and you've also just got infrastructure, which is over 100 years old, and trains, which are over 40 years old. And you've got to manage all of this and work with it. So yes, there's a, you know, on a regular basis, it's making the best of a bad situation and going, okay, well, what can we do now with the resources we have available? What can we do to nudge it forward and to improve it as far as we can? And what can we accept is the other side of that coin, because in the railway, we have rail safety national law. And also with my job in particular, it's what is the standard that we can accept that is still safe, that is still functional, that is, et cetera. So yeah, it's dealing in that gray is where the real work happens, I think, for rail engineering, and particularly for what I do.
Yes.
And it's also really interesting. If it was all black and white, it would be fairly straightforward and you wouldn't have to think too much, because you'd just follow what the paper says and just do that.
That's what makes it interesting, right? It's like the engineering judgment of something, your leadership judgment, and navigating that. And then I think that's why what makes people exceptional leaders is when they can think through solving those challenges, whether it's a people issue or a technical issue, and asking those right questions. When it comes to preparing for the role that you had, how did you think about preparing? What were some of the important things that helped you? Was it really, you know, relying on the experiences that you'd had, or was it something else?
It was the experiences I had. You know, I couldn't have done this role if I hadn't done my time in the Levant Crossing space first, because I didn't understand that part of the industry enough until I was in it. So that was a huge, I'd done a lot of rolling stock and a lot of, which is rail lingo for trains and trams. So I'd done a lot of working on that half of the industry, but the infrastructure side and the big construction and how that works, I hadn't done anything. So when I first joined the Level Crossing space, I was asking the most basic of questions. And I think a couple of people were rolling their eyes, like, who's this chick? What's she doing here? But I got up to speed fairly quickly because, you know, like to learn as much as I can. But it was that, you know, 2 years in the level crossing space was critical for me to be able to do this role. And then still now going out there and asking a lot of questions, because there's a lot of projects and a lot of infrastructure projects that I'm got oversight of that I don't know much about, that I still need to ask a lot of questions about. There's certain things where I still don't think I'm prepared, where I get a topic where I'm just like, what part of the network is this and what are we talking about here? But it is just being prepared to ask those questions and do as much reading in the background as possible. Like I said, like you look at the problem that's in front of you, you ask as many questions and build connections around industry that you know that you can go to in a pinch and say, I've got this thing, I need to provide an answer in the next, you know, X days. Can you please get me as much information as possible in this area so that I can then get up to speed to make a judgment call? So yeah, that's been really important. But yeah, I think the main part of preparation for this role was getting across the infrastructure side and learning more about that. So doing some reading, like going literally back to basics reading on areas of infrastructure that I'm not across. And that's been
amazing.
Quite fun going back to school on that space.
Yeah. Which I know, like, I love learning, so I think that would be fascinating. So I would love nerding out on that. And does your mentor recommended you for this role, and you were about to go on parental leave. So what was that experience like, applying for a position? While was it obvious you were having a baby at that point? How did you bring that up?
Really, because it was during lockdown mostly. So because this was through 2021, I actually remember going on leave, and someone who I'd been working with on a regular basis, who's in one of the project offices, said, "Oh, you know, you're going on long service leave." But it's like, "Oh no, I'm actually going to have a baby," because they only saw me like you know, shoulders up. Not many people knew. So yeah, it was a strange interview to do, because I kind of had to say, "Look, there is an elephant in the room, and it's kind of me. Like, I'm about to give birth, so just need to make sure we note that, because if I am successful, I'm not going to be available until mid-2022. And luckily they knew me enough through industry that, like, yeah, we know. It's okay. It's good. But thanks for letting us know. So yeah, it was awkward. And I literally, I put my hat in the ring just to think, why not? Let's see what happens. Wasn't overly confident of getting it for various reasons. One, did I have the experience? And two, I was going on parental leave. But luckily, I mean, what I wanted to bring, and the reason why I applied for the role actually, is because I'd been on the supplier side of the government and working with them as a client. And there were some areas that I was like, I can see that we could improve things somehow. Can I get my hands, like, can I get in there and change a few processes, switch things around a little bit, and then it would be a bit more user-friendly. And when I was going through the interview process, and I had a call with a couple of senior members of the department, and I said to them, FYI, this is what I'm interested in doing. If that's not what you're interested in, I get it, not a problem, but I'd be frustrated if I wasn't allowed to do that, so maybe let's do this if you're not interested in that. And they said, no, absolutely, that's what we want. So that's why I came along, and they have absolutely supported me in delivering those initiatives and continuing what I'm doing. So I think having that conversation with them up front was key to kind of say, this is what I want to do. What are your thoughts?
And yeah, setting the expectations early.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
that was a lot of fun.
Amazing. Actually, I had a really amazing mentor share with me once that she was applying for she chose not to apply for an executive role because she was pregnant, and her mentor really encouraged her to. And she went ahead, she said, oh, but I'm pregnant, et cetera, et cetera. And her mentor said to her, it'll take about 2 years to train you in this executive role. So if you're going to go on parental leave for, say, 6 months, that's only a quarter of the time. And that's completely fine. You should still apply. She applied, she got through, she told them she was pregnant. And she said it was one of the best parts of her career because she put herself forward for that opportunity. And that always stuck with me, thinking, oh, it's so much more long-term, I think, particularly in senior roles compared to, you know, if you're in a graduate position where it's different, everyone's learning. And that mindset really was a powerful shift for me to realize that it's bigger than this 6 months or a year of parental leave that you're going to take.
It absolutely is. And I have to say, like, absolute kudos and thanks to the department for putting that trust and having that mindset of going, yes, okay, it's going to be 6 months. We can get someone to cover it. I mean, the recruitment process itself was about 2 or so months of that leave anyway. So it was only really 4 months difference.
Yeah.
So let's just take the hit for that 4 months, and then we'll have someone who can be in this role and deliver what we're looking to deliver. And if this is the right candidate, we can wait those 4 extra months for this person to come along.
Yeah.
So yeah, and it set the tone as well for, I know a lot of people say that government is different to private. It really is, from a diversity perspective. It is a completely different kettle of fish. Mm-hmm. Extremely diverse place to work, extremely understanding and flexible, which I'm very grateful for as well, having a young child. But it did really set the tone to me that, oh no, they are, one, willing to interview people who are 36 and a half weeks pregnant, and two, willing to hire someone the basic the day they gave birth and wait for them. So it was a nice introduction to working at the department, and just showed that if you have that different mindset, you can absolutely attract the right talent and mm-hmm. board and have that commitment. So yeah, it's definitely knowing early if it's
going to work, because if you're saying, here's my situation, they're saying yes, then you've got that partnership and alignment.
Yeah.
Had a friend who took a very senior government role, and by the time she'd applied and got the position, she'd gotten pregnant and had a baby in that whole period of time. It took so long. It was one of those ones where Parliament has to actually approve the position. Yep. So I think, yeah, that also stood out to me as something. Yeah, it's okay to follow the course if it's a particularly long recruitment process as well. Yep. Did you early in your career actually want a role like this? Is it something you aspired to? Did you consider leadership? Or it sounds like you've just been very following your nose and doing things that are interesting.
Yes and no. Like, yes, following my nose and doing things that are interesting, because that's where I kind of get fired up and get really interested. And once I'm interested in something, it's, I just want to know a lot about it and find it fascinating. Even now, like I mentioned, I'm still keeping on touch of what's happening in the fire space, because it's still a passion area. I still do a lot of discussions with people in the strategic asset management space about that through life engineering piece, because again, passion area. I didn't necessarily want this role, but I knew from fairly early on, I've always wanted to lead an engineering team. I always thought, because I was very rolling stock focused, I always thought I would have my own train and I'd be the lead engineer for a train. So that's always something that I wanted to do. And I probably still want to do at some point, but I don't know if I will. But yeah, it is something that I've thought about, like, oh yeah, I want my trade, so I can just see it and go, that's my trade. even now though, with this role, I kind of get a little bit of that, because it's really nice to walk around and go, yeah, that's my network, that's my train, that's this. And then I see something happening, I'm going, what's going on there? And I can ask a few questions about it. But I've always wanted to be in engineering and in leadership, which is why I did my bachelor's in engineering and business. And the only difference about my current role is that I've always wanted to have that international view and international tilt, because I have a lot of international experience and I grew up internationally as well. That I've put on the back burner, and strangely and surprisingly, I'm not disliking it. I'm actually quite enjoying not having to do any more phone calls at 1 a.m. or 5 a.m. Or have to, travel internationally within a week over to Germany and back, because I have a meeting over there. So that was extremely exciting through my 20s and early 30s. This stage in my life, I'm like, I'm very happy to not be doing that now. And that's, for me, a surprising mindset shift, but I'm very much enjoying the local government, back and forth to my house every night, having weekends with my local friends. And yes, of course, I miss the travel and I miss my friends internationally, but I'm really enjoying this calmer stage of life.
Amazing. Different phases and different seasons of life. Absolutely. So sounds ideal. My last question to you is, what would be your advice for other aspiring leaders out there, people who do want to make that jump from a technical role into a leadership position? Have you got any key pieces of advice?
I've got two pieces, particularly technical to leadership. And I'll say this, is someone called Liam O'Shaughnessy said this when we were talking to some young leaders at the ARA. If you want to go from technical to leadership, stop being an engineer. It's the hardest thing to do, but it will help you. You do not need to be the person that solves the problem anymore. You need to be the person that supports those solving the problem. And to take that step back is very difficult for engineers to do.
Yes, my identity is like, oh, I'm an engineer. My husband keeps going, you're leading a business now. But I'm an engineer.
We never stop being engineers. The way that we problem solve, the way we think through things, and the way that we approach a situation, we will always be engineers, but we're not doing the engineering anymore. So step back. It's my first piece of advice if you want to be a leader. The second piece for anyone going through your career, no matter what, whether you want to go through the technical pathway or the leadership pathway, is volunteer with organizations across industry. That's for two reasons. One, it's a really fun sandpit to play and build your soft skills. And two, you build amazing networks that you would otherwise not have any awareness existed or access to. So for example, from a very early part of my career, I was volunteering with the Institution of Mechanical Engineers in the UK and also here in Australia. A lot of that travel in my late 20s, early 30s was through the Army Key. I've seen some fantastic parts of the world with them and the volunteering I was doing there. I also then volunteered with the Engineers Australia and also with the Australian Railway Association. So through those three organizations, I've had experiences that I would never otherwise have had, and I've gained knowledge that I would never have otherwise have gained, which I think has absolutely helped me in my career. But also, as I mentioned before, the networks, a lot of the roles that I've received in the last 8 years have been because of people in my network that have said, heads up, this one's on the market, something you might be interested in, put your CV in. And without that, I don't know if I'd be here today, obviously. But yeah, there's even then, when I've got something that's bugging me, I can call these people and go, what's your thoughts on this? Or what's your thoughts on this role? What's your thoughts on whatever it is? I know that there's a network of people there who I've met outside of my core role that I can call and just bounce ideas through with.
Yeah, so, like the informal network that sort of even sits around that you can just bounce ideas off.
Yeah, absolutely. So all of that is through volunteering. Yes, it was extra time out of my day, but the dividends have been far more than whatever I put in. So definitely recommend to volunteer. And obviously a lot of these organizations, they don't run without volunteers. So if you have these peak bodies, whether it's for rail or engineering or even, you know, whichever industry other people are in, volunteer for these peak bodies. One, for the benefits you get, if you want to take it from the selfish perspective, but also to keep them going and to keep the industry going. It's really, really important to volunteer.
Absolutely. And that's how we met, actually, was on the Engine Australia Victorian Division Board. So we wouldn't have met without that, which would definitely be a loss for me, Amy. So I completely agree. Volunteering has made a big difference for me. I've learned so much. I feel like I've learned like 90% of my leadership in volunteering, because I got to, like you said, a sandpit. You get to try and test things out and then bring it back to your role. And it's also a safe space to do that, because that you're not at risk in your job. If you have a difficult conversation and it goes poorly, then you've got a chance to practice it again or have a bit more of a play, where in your day job, there is more of a risk in that environment. And for me, I felt like that was quite scary. So love that advice. Also love about stop being an engineer. It's a great reminder for me, because I'm absolutely guilty of thinking way too much like an engineer. I need to unlearn that and relearn business and leadership as I go. Thank you so much, Amy. You've been fantastic. I've really enjoyed the conversation and can't wait to see where your career takes you next. Thanks so much.
Thanks so much, Felicity.
Thank you.